You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up. The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 60 of Take a Bow Podcast. I'm your host, Eli Chokash, and it's not only episode 60, but it's also part two of the Ryan Wersing, or really act two, of the Ryan Wersing show. And so excited to finish this last part off with all of you and share his stories from Cher and Hello Dolly and Chicago. And these stories, I mean, they just continue to get better and better. His stories about Cher are just hilarious, and I cannot wait for all of you to listen to it. But before we turn it over to that, let's turn it over to what's going on in this industry right now, especially with all of these exciting things happening, and we are getting inches and inches closer to Broadway fully reopening. This week, the Jimmy Awards are going to be actually today, tonight at 7:30. It's hosted by Corbin Blue, and it's going to be free on YouTube Live for everyone to stream. So everyone, go check that out. I was so excited because this week I was actually able to talk to a Jimmy Award finalist on the podcast. So that'll be coming out next week, and I'm very excited for you all to listen to that. And it's a great episode, and made some new friends, so that was always good. I love the Jimmy Awards. We talked about how amazing it was, and just I figured in this Jimmy Awards season it would be great to bring on someone whose area of expertise could be useful for both myself and listeners. So very excited. The Jimmy Awards are incredible. I think they're one of the most important awards. You see new talent performing on a Broadway stage and having an opportunity to be able to perform in front of the top casting directors in the industry, and just an opportunity of a lifetime. So it's definitely worth checking out. Please go support these young artists who are putting themselves out there and entertaining others in this time. So it's just brilliant. Some other exciting news going on. Ben Platt just recently announced that he's going to be releasing a second album. Oh my goodness. If this is anything like his first, Sing to Me Instead, I am not ready. I'm not emotionally prepared. I will never be, but I am also always here for it. And I'm obsessed with his music, and I cannot wait for August 13th, and I'm literally counting down the days. So everyone, August 13th, it's called Riviere, and I'm just so excited. I don't know. I don't know. I love Ben Platt. I love his voice. I love his music. It's just so beautiful. It's so relatable and very exciting stuff. And as we all know, if any of you have listened to these episodes before, I'm a huge, huge advocate and fan of Broadway stars just expanding their audience and their platforms and their selves, in going to different aspects of the industry, such as music and movies and TV shows. And speaking of, let's talk about these Emmy nominations, okay? Because there were a lot of Broadway names in this year's Emmy nominations, which is so exciting. And as you all, like I said, I love seeing Broadway being on a pedestal as high as the other aspects of the industry that are held, I guess, a little bit above Broadway, which is not right and it's not fair. But you all know how I feel about that. So that being said, let's shout out those people who got nominated, shall we? I mean, obviously we knew this was going to be a big year with the Disney Plus recording of Hamilton. And so, of course, Lin-Manuel Miranda, Leslie Odom Jr., Debbie Diggs, Jonathan Groff, Anthony Ramos, Philippa Sue, Renee Elise Goldsberry, all kinds of different people, literally, of course, got nominated for Hamilton. And then, of course, we have MJ Rodriguez and Billy Porter, who are both nominated in leading roles for a Fox drama series, Pose. Tony Award winner Cynthia Erivo is also nominated for her amazing performance in Aretha, the Aretha Franklin movie. Randy Rainbow, who is a Broadway kind of personality, was nominated for outstanding short form comedies, so like YouTube and stuff like that, which is very exciting. So Bernadette Peters for her performance in Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist. Robert Lopez, who writes all those Disney movies, and Kristen Lopez, of course, his wife. And of course, Julie Andrews, Jessica Walter, Titus Burgess, they all earned nominations. And of course, I would be remiss to not mention my dear friend and also Take a Bow podcast previous guest, Bowen Yang, also got nominated, and he is the first ever SNL actor to be nominated in the supporting character. So he's not technically like one of the main characters like Kate McKinnon and all that, but he's more like in the supporting areas, and he's the first ever actor to be nominated for an Emmy from SNL in that category. So very, very amazing stuff that we see there. And it's also just like history that, okay, I don't know what I'm saying. Very incredible work. I'm so proud of him, and very excited to see if he wins. So everyone stay tuned. And I don't know if you guys listened to the interview, go watch it because after... Go listen to it because after you're literally going to be the biggest Bowen Yang fan, and go listen to Las Culturistas and all the things because he deserves it. And he's like always working, and this recognition for him is just so major, and I could not be happier for him. Let's talk about some other things that's happening. So the Karate Kid musical is going to get a pre-Broadway tryout in the spring of 2022. So right now they've been like this production has been in the works for like a couple years and have been slowly coming, and now it's finally going to get it shot in a 2022 tryout, which is very exciting. So that's happening next spring. And then Harry Potter and the Cursed Child moved up their reopening date to November 12th. So that's very exciting because it was actually a couple months later. And so now that they moved it up, hopefully that means they will also be moving up their because you know how they're opening like just the first part. So hopefully that impacts that as well. And they'll be able to show both parts at the same time sooner or all at the same. I don't know. Either sooner or right when it opens. So I'll keep you all. So I'll keep you all updated if anything changes. But I don't know. The show is just supposed to be seen in two parts. So I hope it works out that way. And I hope that people are able to see both parts and not just the first. That's it for the Broadway news. But I do want to mention one more thing that actually is very exciting from the Take a Bow side of things. Just this week, we introduced the LGBTQIA plus Pride merch, and I'm very excited about it, and I created it myself, so I'm very proud of it. Please go check it out if you have not already. It's on our Instagram, so you may have seen pictures, or you can go to our website, takeaboutpod.com, and you can go see it there, or even order some. And right now, there's only t-shirts and hoodies, but I'm going to be adding a lot more to that collection. And I'm also going to start doing some other pride colors as well. So not only are we going to be doing the LGBTQIA plus community and the bisexual community and all of those other communities based on your likes and interests and sexuality, but we will also be doing mental health pride and disabled pride month and all of these different things. We're going to be incorporating all of those in Black Lives Matter, of course. And so I'm trying my best and I'm going to move as quickly as possible, but stay tuned for all of that because there's going to be a lot of exciting things happening, and hopefully we're going to get some new designs as well super soon. So I'll keep you all posted, but for now that's what we have, and I hope that you all enjoy them. I'm glad to see that we've already got a few orders. So this is very exciting, and I actually got a lot of interest from previous guests. So that's great, and I'm going to be sending out to them as well. Also, major note about the LGBTQIA plus merch. All of the proceeds are going to be going straight to the Trevor Project. So if you purchase a hoodie, a t-shirt, whatever, and it's the LGBTQIA plus collection, that is going to be going straight to the Trevor Project. And I'll make sure I can put it in your name. I can put it in Take a Bow's name. I could do it whatever way that you would like. You can tell me on the website when you make the purchase, if you would like to put it in your name or not. But if you do donate, it's basically donating to the Trevor Project while also receiving a gift, courtesy of Take a Bow. So, please consider doing it. And, I'm very excited to be helping out and teaming up with the Trevor Project. That being said, let's turn it over to the Drama Dictionary and then we'll turn it over to Ryan, everyone. I am so sorry. This week's Drama Dictionary is going to be featuring Ryan Wersing, and he's going to be talking to us about the gypsy robe, and he does that in the interview. So really, our Drama Dictionary is going to be this interview. So with that being said, Ryan Wersing, curtain up. Ryan, do you need to go? I know we've been doing it for an hour, but like, good.
I don't have anything to do.
Great, because this is way too enjoyable. There's so many things to talk about with you. Okay, we can move on from Finding Neverland, I guess.
Whatever.
Whatever.
There's still plenty we could talk about, but it was such a special place.
Yes.
Even with all this hindsight, it was such a special place.
There was something about coming into that stage door where it was like you really felt like you were just in a new world. Like, honestly, it just like it's cheesy, but like there was a certain smell about it. The minute you walked in, it was like a grayish white wall, and like it was like a light. Like, I don't know, like it was just like magical, like as though it was like a gray and white wall. Like, there was just something about it.
I don't know if it was because the show had such elements of magic to it as well, but there really was just, and again, I've said this already, but I couldn't put my finger on what about it has made such a lasting, special impression on me, but there really was magic in the air every day. Part of it was the story we were telling and how attached we all, I mean, everybody has some connection to the Peter Pan story.
Oh, sure.
And I really felt like what we were doing with it was touching people.
Yeah.
It really, it made a difference. And the cast, it would have been so easy for us to like speak that into existence and scare it away. And but we all tried to honor it every night.
Absolutely. Okay. So, Hello Dolly. Come on. You're on stage with Bette Midler. Not a big deal. You already mentioned it. Like it was nothing, you know, like just casual. But what was it like? Okay. Honestly, like Hello Dolly is an iconic show as is, but then to have that cast is just like next level. What was that every night? I mean, that's crazy.
The whole experience was next level. I mean, I don't even know where to begin. I almost didn't go to my audition for it because I was just like, this is so otherworldly. What? In no plane of existence do I get to be a part of this experience.
Mm.
And then I was just so fortunate to get to be in that room.
Right.
Hello Dolly, I had done it before. Like I said, it was my first professional job, but I'd also done it as a kid. While I liked Hello Dolly, okay, I'm going to be very, I can say this to you. having done a show like Finding Neverland, I booked Hello Dolly in like our last 3 months at Finding Neverland. And I was very hesitant to leave the experience of Finding Neverland and move on to the experience of Hello Dolly, because I loved the people at Finding Neverland so much. I didn't think I would have a backstage or dressing room experience nearly as stellar as I'd had at Finding Neverland. Or, you know, I felt like the show, like I've said, was about something, like we were doing something. There was a part of me that was just like, Hello Dolly's not about anything.
Right.
What are we doing here? And then our very first day of rehearsal, we're in the room with Jerry Zaks, who is our director. I had never worked with Jerry before. He's an absolute genius. And he was telling us, about the history of Hello Dolly. And he was telling us about Hello Dolly's out-of-town tryout before it opened in New York. They had performed in D.C. for their out-of-town tryout just weeks after Kennedy was assassinated. This was a history that I did not know. And the country, after JFK's assassination, had basically been in mourning. I mean, people were wearing black for weeks on end.
Yeah.
And here was this little show about choosing life before life passes you by, that was about to open in Washington, D.C. And Jerry told us that, you know, people had to choose to come into that room and sit down for a show and choose to be happy. And what that experience became for people in the wake of such national tragedy, to be in a group of people and to choose life and to choose happiness again. And that's what Hello Dolly was all about. And especially as we were starting rehearsals in January of 2017, that was exactly what the world needed again. We were in this collective state of mourning for the previous 2 months, and people were going to have to choose to enter a room and be happy together again. And it was our responsibility to provide that for him. And that gave me a completely different lens on what our responsibility as actors doing that production became. And now I just think the world of that show, and as many two-dimensional productions as I have seen and been a part of, that was definitely not one of them. It exposed a richness to that show and the performances in it that I am so grateful that I got to witness and watch every night and develop in the rehearsal rooms. I mean, it was a dream come true to watch Bette Midler create the eating scene.
Yeah.
I remember when we were staging that scene, I shouldn't admit this, but I'm going to. When we were staging that scene, because I had done the show before, I was like, okay, let's not get staged in the docket scene. That gets really long, and to have to sit through it 8 times a week for a year, however long we're doing it, I would rather not be melting on stage after the polka and Hello Dolly and the Waiter's Gallop every night. If I can be off stage for that scene, that would be great.
Right.
I was not off stage for that scene, but it ended up being one of the greatest gifts of the show, getting to watch that, do that eating scene every night, which then led into Gavin doing his monologue for It Only Takes a Moment, which usually is like watching paint dry, but to watch him do it, I mean, it was a gift. Every night, every inch of that show I got to experience was a gift. The crown jewel of my career, for sure.
I love that. That's awesome.
We all knew that it was something special. Even like you said with Finding Neverland, you know, egos were put aside.
Yes.
Because we knew that none of us were Bette Midler, but also it was even bigger than Bette. The production became even bigger than Bette. That being said, I have never in my whole career seen anyone who is as devoted to their audience as Bette Midler is, which was a great lesson in and of itself. And if she was going to be there every night, we had to be there too.
You know,
performing at this level where we were basically crawling out of the stage door at the end of the day.
You know, you're not the first person to say that on here. We had Beanie Feldstein on the podcast, and she had nothing but the highest praise for Bette, saying she, it was like, thank you five, but everyone went to sit down and Bette was still up doing her blocking, her dancing, whatever she needed to do. It was like, she was an incredible leader. So that is so cool to hear.
She was, I mean, if she asked me to run into traffic right now, I'd probably do it because I just have so much respect for that woman,
right?
And the work that she does and what she asks of herself and her co-stars. I will never forget, I understudied Ambrose later
on,
and the very first time I went on, the show opens with the two of them. It's basically him running out and shouting Mrs. Levi a whole bunch of times, and they're supposed to get the train, and it's just the two of them. And I was terrified. But she wanted to rehearse with me. She wanted to rehearse with me before a half hour. Oh. And I'm not kidding with you. She had done the show for months at this point. And she knew me from the ensemble, but like we had only done our numbers together. I have never received more eye contact from a scene partner than I did from that. She was just so there with me at all times. And then, of course, she was so gracious. Whenever an understudy would go on, she'd give them the final bow. I mean, the woman, as Beanie said, I have nothing but the utmost respect for her and the work she does. We celebrated her birthday on stage one day, and we had this massive cake.
No way.
The cake came down, and the first thing out of her mouth was, let's cut this up and give it to people at the stage door. That's just always where her head was. That's always where her head was. We had to stop the show for technical difficulties. She's like, you want me to go out and sing for the audience? She was the greatest. I cannot sing her praise enough. And what's more is that was every single principal on that show. They were the most selfless, giving people. David Hyde Pierce is the nicest man in show business.
Yes.
Unquestionably, nicest man in show business. Gavin Creel, Kate Baldwin, Beanie Feldstein, Taylor, and then when Charlie...
Oh, my God.
Everyone was the kindest. And a lot of them could have had egos. Those are some... big stars, big names who have done a lot of great stuff. But everyone realized how special the moment was. And even Bette got to that point. She hadn't done a Broadway musical since Fiddler. Mm. She told us on our very first day with her, she was, you know, so grateful that we all wanted to work on this project. We're like, are you kidding? We're lucky to be here. But she said, you know, every last one of you, you're all better singers than me. You're all better dancers than me. None of you are funnier than I am, was the
next no thing way. That's amazing.
And she said, but I'm just so grateful to be here. That being said, I haven't been on a Broadway stage that wasn't just by myself in 50 years. So if I turn to you and say, what are you doing on my stage? Just be patient.
Stop it. Did that ever happen?
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater. SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
No, we had been warned. We were like, you know, just be ready to play in the moment with Bette. But no, she was always right there with us. Even in the moments where, like, in the gypsy run or whatever, where she would forget her purse or drop a line or whatever. No, she was always, she was so in control of her performance and what she could do with the audience that none of it mattered. But that was because she had put in so much work leading up to it. I mean, she knew that role backwards and forwards down to her pinkies. Beanie may have talked about this, but Beanie and I would always talk about how much we like to watch Bette's hands work because there was life dripping through the ends of her fingertips. She was always so fully present, even through her fingertips, that it was thrilling to watch and be part of every night. And she was just funny. Funny broad.
Hilarious. And like on stage, her little one-liners were just everyone was like floored, everyone was blown away, but at the same time falling on the floor laughing, like literally.
She was also one of the first people that I ever worked with who, like, I kind of, especially, she was a huge part of some of my favorite childhood movies.
Yeah.
She was the first time I was working with someone that I was almost starstruck, I guess.
Mm.
But that just, she was never that person. You know, she was always so much about the work. There would be days when we would be rehearsing scenes and she'd just shake it off and she'd go, "Ooh, that was too Winnie." And we'd be like, "Do you mean Winifred Sanderson from Hocus Pocus? Because that was you.
Stop
that
it.
Was you."
That's just a crazy. Legend.
And to get to watch her work, it was, again, the thrill of my career.
Oh, that is legendary. So legendary. Freaking cool.
Yeah.
I have to ask, like, Hello, Dolly, man. Like, it's no joke. Like, going from Finding Neverland to how physically demanding that show is to then Hello Dolly, like almost right away, like both of those shows, I mean, those numbers in Hello Dolly are not easy at all, and they're huge and they're long. So like, yeah. What did you do? Like, how do you keep yourself like in shape and making sure that there's no injuries and all of that? Like,
that's a really great question, because I have found that with each show I do, I have to modify my like training and stretching regimen.
Sure.
Completely. And when I was doing Hello Dolly, I actually was taking a lot of CrossFit classes. Just because of how athletic the show was.
Right.
So while yes, the act two numbers were incredibly demanding, and they were, there was even stuff like I ended the number before the parade passes by with Jessica Lee Golden sitting one-handed.
Yes.
And I would walk around the passerelle and then do a turn with her sitting on my hand, pressed over my shoulder the whole time. That was not anything my shoulder was ready for before I had gotten to do the boy lifts in Finding Neverland with you guys.
No way.
So it's things like that that they accumulate. And you're like, okay, I have this skill set from this weird thing that I had to do in a show before, but now I can apply it here. But now I'm going to have to do it differently. I'm going to have to strengthen the shoulder with some stabilizing and some handstands. So that's why I led to a lot of CrossFit on that show.
No way.
We also, I mean, those waiters gallops were absurd.
Oh my God.
There was one section where I had about two counts of eight to go down stage center and then run all the way around the back of the stage, run up the back staircases and end up on the banister to slide right back down the stairs. So just the athleticism of it alone required more than just your average dance classes. And that's when CrossFit really became helpful for me on that show, just for my stamina alone. The way Act Two is structured in Dolly is the principles start with elegance, and then it immediately goes into the waiter's gallop. And while there's like six or I think there's seven variations on the waiter's gallop that we did, but there's only about, you know, this much dialogue in between each and every one of them. And mm-hmm. I was in all but one variation of the waiter's gallops. So you do all of that, which total time is about 10 minutes. And then you've only got two pages of dialogue to change your costume and come back on for the 6.5 minute title production number, Hello Dolly, with its own reprise, which then you go off stage and change into a wool tuxedo to do the polka. So
right.
Just stamina alone of that show for the gentleman was very taxing. We had a lot of fans backstage, ice packs. It was not infrequent for the gentleman to be standing, sweating in just their tuxedo shirts with crotch straps and not much else.
Oh my God.
It was a very hot show. Lots of wool, lots of three-piece suits. Beautiful costumes, don't get me wrong. But
no,
again,
oh my God.
You didn't want to be standing on stage for the courtroom scene if you didn't have to be.
Nope. Understandable. That's tough. Yeah. Oh my God. I can't imagine. That show was literally maybe the most colorful show that I've ever seen. Literally, like between Bette's dress, Beanie's dress, the blue suits that were in it, Taylor's suit, like everyone had a different color. It was almost like Mary Poppins.
Costumes. Yes, very Mary Poppins. Yeah.
Yes.
But that was the thing. It's like the costumes were probably hotter than they needed to be. But again, we all recognized the moment. We were like,
right.
Are you going to get to wear costumes this beautiful? on stage with Bette Midler ever again? When are you going to get to ride this train across the stage ever again?
Yes. We were my God.
It was every moment was like, okay, I can make this little sacrifice because I can recognize the greatness of the whole.
Right. So freaking amazing. Cool.
Yeah, it yes. was worth every bit of it. Every bit.
And you were with it the whole run, right?
I left for 2 months when the Cher show had their out-of-town tryout in Chicago. And then the day before we headed back to New York after Cher, I got a phone call from our company manager at Hello Dolly because my replacement had torn his ACL. So then I got to go back in for the last 6 weeks when Bette and David came back and close out the show before we started our New York run of the Cher show.
Oh my God. Wait, so did you ever do the show with Victor Garber?
I sure did.
Oh my God.
Yeah, his first like 4 or 5 months. He was so lovely.
I'm obsessed.
He and David, they were so sweet. They just loved, especially because they come from a history of stage work. They have such regard and respect what we do. I'll never forget the first day that we did the title number of Hello Dolly with Victor in the room. He'd seen the show a number of times, but just like, it was almost like he was fangirling over us.
Oh my God.
He just kept coming up to us and complimenting us on the number over and over again. And it was so sweet. It reminded me of a moment that I had with David in our initial rehearsals. We were rehearsing downtown off of Union Square at a place that used to rehearse a lot of Broadway shows, but it was kind of out of the way for our show.
Yeah.
And it was just the two of us in the elevator one day. And I remembered that he wasn't called until 10:30 that morning. It was about 9:45 and he was there. We're riding the elevator up. How are you? How's your day? Did you have a great evening yesterday? And then I said to him, David, I didn't think you were called this early. What are you doing here? And he just looked at me and as earnestly as could be said, well, you're rehearsing Broadway choreography this morning, aren't you? I have the opportunity to be in the room for that. Why would I miss that?
No,
and he would just come sit and watch our choreography rehearsals.
Wow.
These people, I mean, as big of stars as they were,
right.
So generous and just like all of us felt so lucky to be in the room. It made for the greatest experience.
That's pretty incredible. I mean, like, it seems like, I mean, it's easy for like us to say, like, you know, we really get to understand, like, we're so thankful to be in the room with these people and all of that, but they like understand the bigger picture of just like, oh, like, you know, this could be my last time on stage and this could be, and then I'm going to go do another movie, like whatnot. And then
moments like, David would stand off stage left and watch us do the title number every day. He would come on at the end of the reprise, but you know, he could have been with his dresser getting water, but he would watch it every day because no matter what we achieve, what success we arrive at, I do think that especially for us theater kids, there's still that part of us that is kind of willing to pinch ourselves to believe that we're still there. And I think that was genuinely that moment for him each night. You know, he got to drink that in, and with all of his success, it was still a special treat to be in that moment.
Totally. And you know, Broadway's hard, so like
it's hard,
he like it's he hard. Gets it, you know, like he's like, this, I appreciate this, you know, like everyone can take a step back. And I feel like, as like for me, like I never understood that until I haven't worked in 3 years. So like, you know, like you then you get to reflect and you're like, wow, like that is so cool, like I was on
maybe
a Broadway stage.
Like,
yeah, like you don't get it. Like when you're in the moment, you're kind of just like worried about like telling the story and having fun with who you're with and everything, and you're living in the moment, really. And then afterwards, you're like, wow, like that's something really, really cool that I just did. Yeah. You
it
know,
is, I mean, we work so hard at it, and when you're in it, sometimes it is difficult to see the forest for the trees. You're rehearsing all day and then you're performing, and then you've got to, you know, rest up for what is another long slog the next day. It's not always easy to reflect in the moment. Sometimes it does take that distance.
There's hardly ever time to reflect.
There's not.
There's just not. So like, you really have to wait until afterwards. I want to talk to you about the Share Show because I want to talk to you about the Share Show for a lot of reasons. First of all, 2 weeks as Share, come on.
Let's talk about two weeks
as Share. I'm so, so mad to like say this right now. I never got to see the Share Show.
It's okay. We only ran for what, 9-10 months?
Well, that was the problem. Exactly. So if it was a little longer, I would have been done with Trevor and I would have been able to see you guys. So I was in Chicago and you guys had just left Chicago, basically.
Just left.
You know, like it's like, ugh, we just missed. Sorry about that. Yeah, whatever. It was planned, I'm sure. No. But honestly, like, I want to talk to you. I don't even know if I should talk to you about the show first or if I should talk to you about your gypsy robe moment because let's talk about that because you got to wear the gypsy robe. First of all, explain to everyone what kind of that is, how that works, and then tell me about what that moment was like for you.
Okay, so the gypsy robe, which has since been changed to the Legacy Robe, is a huge Broadway backstage tradition. I want to say it started around the show Gentlemen Prefer Blondes, somewhere in there. I think I might be close on that. And basically it is an honor to be presented to the individual in the ensemble who has the most Broadway ensemble credits. It is just kind of a way to honor what we, or at least used to think of as the unsung heroes of the Broadway shows. You know, they're not going to be nominated for Tony Awards. They're not going to get above title billing, but they're the workhorses, the people who have put in the time and have supported a lot of Broadway shows along their way. So it's a real honor. You know, the people who have gotten it are people who have made incredible careers out of performing on Broadway. You know, I have friends who got it. The woman who got it on Hello, Dolly, I think Hello, Dolly was like her 13th Broadway show when she got it on that.
To
know that the history that they bring with them, and then when you get the great honor of being named as well to be a part of that history was a very flattering moment for me.
Yes.
I was truly honored. But then of course, once you are announced as the Legacy Robe recipient, there are plenty of superstitions that you have to follow through with so that you don't jinx the production. So you then run around the stage 3 times counterclockwise so that everyone in the company can hit your hand, high five, or touch the robe. And then you have to visit every dressing room while wearing the robe and bless the theater with the Legacy Robe. Then you also get the great honor of handing on the Legacy Robe to the next recipient at the next opening night, which for me, I had really good luck because I got to give it to Erica Mansfield, who we did Finding Neverland with.
Yes.
When Kiss Me Kate opened.
Oh my God.
That also was so special to be able to give it to someone who I have worked with, who I love so very much. And it was her first time receiving it as well. To pass that honor on to her. The whole experience of it was really something that I don't take for granted.
It's super special. That's so cool.
Again, like I said earlier, you know, so much of what I love about what we do is the history of this business and why things are the way they are. And it's moments like that that make you feel a part of that history.
Right. And that's something that will stay with you forever too. Like, you know, it's so incredible. I mean, every Broadway show will stick with you forever, but like, that's like another moment. And just to have that during Cher and everything.
Yeah. It's one of those things, you know, I have been at this a while now. making my business in the theater, and you know, some things do sort of start to feel the same after a while, not in a bad way, but the novelty of things sort of starts to wear off, but then it's little moments like that you're like, oh yeah, that's just another feather in my cap that when I look back on this time in 20 or 30 years I'm going to really think fondly on that opportunity.
Yeah, that's amazing. Ugh, yeah, I love that so much. Okay,
okay, Cher.
Cher.
So Cher. Oh my God. First of all, wow. I mean, like, it's so cool that, I don't know, like, the fact that Cher was always, like, very hands-on with the production and everything, I think was so, so cool to, like, from a fan perspective, just be, like, during, like, seeing that, and you can just be, like, more appreciative of the project and everything that goes with it. So, like, how was that for you? And also, we'll start out with that.
Cher herself,
yeah,
was a fascinating creature. I had limited interactions with her.
Oh, okay.
But when I did, they were always funny little comical moments. I will never forget when we were developing the show. We did a 4-week lab about a year before we took it to Chicago.
Sure.
And we did, she came to one of our presentations and they were like, Cher, will you speak to the group before we present your life story to you? And she's like, okay. So we're all in the room. She's like, okay, everybody gather around. Let's circle up. And she kind of does this gesture. And so everyone like gathers as if they're gonna hold hands. And she goes, but let's not hold hands because I just met you.
Oh.
And someone was like, oh my gosh, we just offended Cher. But I was like, right. I spent the last year and a half working with that. And they were very close friends. So like, I understand what that kind of energy is coming from. And it's not coming from a dark or dismissive place. It's coming from a protective place of a woman right. who's had to survive in her career for 50 years entirely by herself. So it was moments like that that I found comical of like, oh yes, you are fascinating because of the way you've had to care for yourself, protect yourself, right. advance yourself over these many years. When the first time she came and saw the show in Chicago, she was sitting yes. right behind me.
What are you getting?
She was sitting right behind me. And she came in after the lights went out. She was wearing a hat, so nobody really knew she was there. I obviously knew she was there. And there was this one part in the show where Sunny and Cher were exchanging rings.
Yeah.
And there was inscriptions. And the line was something about, I got inscribed on the inside of the ring. And from behind me, she goes, well, that's not how it happened.
She screamed it out?
Screamed it.
Oh, my God.
Totally. For the whole audience to hear. Apparently the inscription was on the outside of the ring and not the inside of the ring. So that was something we had to fix for performances the next day. But it was just like, oh, this is what we're getting into.
Yes.
That's not how it happened.
Oh my God. That is iconic. Only Cher would be allowed to like do that, you know?
It was a learning experience in that regard. I've worked with plenty of celebrities, but on stage with them. But to have right. somebody of that star power and that level of fame on the other side of the table adds a completely different dimension to things.
Right. See, that's what I want to know. Like, when Diane came to see Pippin in Finding Neverland, it was like nerve-wracking, okay? Like, all you want to do is like make sure that like their vision is what it like was what I'm doing. So like, what was it like to like perform for the person that the story is your, that's the story that you're telling? Like, it's literally, it's not like she's like told you how to do it or anything like that, but like, it's, she's lived it. Like, how can I make it to that?
Right. It was tricky.
Yeah.
It was tricky. If I'm going to be totally frank, I think bio musicals are probably best saved for once a person is no longer with us.
Oh, okay.
And that is not any sort of criticism on Cher at all. I'm speaking very broadly in general. Sure. Because she did contribute a lot of really good stuff, but it was those moments like that, like she shouted out in Chicago, well, that's not how it happened. Where the inscription of the ring was on the inside of the outside was not kind of the crux of that scene. Like, that was not the important thing that necessarily needed the attention and focus on creating a really focused narrative.
Sure.
And so there were a handful of moments like that along the way of like, okay, let's absolutely honor the experience. and stay as true to it as possible, but also remember that we are trying to stage this life. And not everything is going to be to a T the way it was maybe experienced.
Sure.
We also went through a lot of incarnations of the lens with which we told that story.
There were
certain concepts that used to be layered on it. Like when we were in our out-of-town tryout in Chicago, it was basically a show within a show, as if we were creating a variety show around Cher's life. And then that got tossed out. So as we were trying to sort through some of that, especially with her, the questions became, okay, how over the top and how exaggerated do we make some of these things in the attempt to make them feel like a very theatrical variety show? And then how do we refocus or pare them back to make them the honest moment that they actually were in this woman's life? And sometimes those things weren't always agreeable.
Yeah. Wow. That's
and that
crazy.
That was really an interesting learning experience to watch the creatives try and navigate
what they
thought would be really good storytelling versus staying true to Cher and what she was really looking for.
Right. Wow. That's fascinating.
It was a lot. It was, again, I don't know that it would necessarily be my first project to want to like hop back into creating that kind of world with somebody who is still so close to it.
Right.
I also find that, at least this is just for me, the best bio musicals are the ones that are told by antagonists. You know, we think of Evita being told so well because we get Che's perspective.
Sure.
Hamilton is told so well because we get Burr's perspective.
Mm.
And when the person that you're telling their story about is alive, you're not always granted the opportunities to share other people's perspectives on them.
Wow. Yeah, totally. That totally makes sense. Oh my God. When you're a writer, oh my God, what can't you do? Piano, writing, dance captain, everything.
Oh Lord. I don't know that I'm going to make it that far, but.
Right. But okay. So your role in Cher was a swing, and you understudied some iconic people in the music industry. So what was, first of all, what was the experience of being an offstage swing? Okay, and not having to do it every night, and also just playing those roles.
Being off stage on that show was a lot of work.
Because oh, yeah?
That was one of those shows where, especially for the ensemble, the offstage work was almost more difficult than the onstage work. Very rarely did the ensemble get out there and perform a full number. Like we think of with traditional musicals. If we did full versions of Cher songs, they were generally performed solely by the three ladies. So we would often get out there and do like 8 counts of eight of choreography, 12 counts of eight of choreography, and then you'd run off stage and have to change into another ridiculous, completely fabulous costume and move some set pieces around. So it was tough in the regard that it wasn't your standard musical. As far as swinging and dance captaining, a lot of work was required of like, okay, I move this set piece here, and then I don't even know how this quick change works because he's the only person in the show who has this one costume, and it's absurd. It's completely
right.
built for him. There was a lot of trailing that I had to do on that show. It was also technically a very big show. It was bigger than sometimes it physically needed to be, because our main set pieces were these two folding walls, basically. And each wall was run by automation. And then on each wall, there were 5 panels each. And on one side was a mirrored side, and on the other side was all LED lights. So just the technical aspect of the show required a lot more specificity to keep people safe, to get people in their right light. So that, while my dance captaining on Finding Neverland a lot of the time felt like sharing the storytelling that we were doing. Cher felt a lot more technical.
Gotcha.
I had to be a lot more, it was not so much, okay, find this journey of how they get to here and play in this world in this play. It had to be a lot more specific for no other reason, just to keep people safe. So they didn't get a massive Cher angel wing in the eye. You know, it was a treacherous show.
Yeah. Oh my God.
We had trap doors that were constantly going down. Just the technical aspect had to be super specific.
Right. Wow. Jeez. That's intense. And you were the dance captain there too, right? Mm-hmm. So you were teaching. Yeah. Oh my God. Hopefully not as many rehearsals as Neverland.
There still seem to be quite a few rehearsals.
Oh boy. Oh boy.
But yeah, but not quite as many, I would say.
Okay.
But yeah, we still rehearse a lot. I'm waiting for that show where I just like go in and do my 2.5 hours a night and that's it. But I don't think
or one act anytime soon.
Hey, yes, I would welcome a come from away.
Right. Right. I think a lot of people would. That and like
some
a fun home.
And be done
kind
in
of
90
thing.
Minutes. Yes, exactly.
Right. We love that. We do. And Trevor is kind of similar. It's not like crazy. It's Josh Prince choreography, but it's not like it's like craziness. Like it's nothing like physically demanding, which is beautiful.
There are really nice things about that. You know, we all love to be a part of, you know, a show that looks like there's tons of money on stage, but at the same time, there's something like some of my favorite work that I did was on stage at Chicago Musical, where all we're doing is moving chairs around. And that's just, you know, because it gives you the time and permission to really just focus on storytelling.
Yes.
You're not so caught up in all of the technical elements, which can be great. And really enhance the production or the viewing experience. But when your job as the actor is just kind of focus on your job as an actor, that can be really nice.
It's also, there is a lot of beauty in simplicity because especially for an audience member, like in Neverland, like there's still like, my parents have seen it however many times, like, you know, and like every time they're like, oh, I noticed this today and I noticed this. And that's just because there's so many things happening where you can't catch everything, you know, like, and you can't just focus on the storytelling because of everything visually that's happening, even from an audience perspective.
Some people would make the argument that in that world, you know, you have to, they feel limited in their creativity. They feel the limitations that much more. Whereas I find the people that I respect the most creatively find that to be an opportunity as opposed to a hindrance. When they have to narrow their scope, it allows them to really be crystal clear in their storytelling.
Yeah. It's wonderful. So I try to go to chronological order, but I missed the Chicago segment. Let's talk about Chicago. Okay. If what I've read is correct, sometimes it's not. You've had multiple stints in the show, right?
Yeah, so I did about 3 years total over a 4-year period. The first time I joined the show, I did it for just shy of 2 years. And then I left to go do the out-of-town tryout of The Nutty Professor, Marvin Hamilton's last musical.
Sure.
And then he passed away during our out-of-town tryout, and the show never went anywhere. So as soon as I got back into town, a few weeks later, Chicago called, and they said, hey, would you be interested in coming back in as a medical replacement? So I went back for 6 months as a medical replacement.
Oh, those medical replacements.
You know, and then left the show that time, and 9 months later, they called, and they said, hey, we have an opening. So I went back for another year. So on and off, I did 3 years over a 4-year period. But yeah, it was like 1,300 or 1,400 performances total.
Oh my God. That's insane.
Okay, it is insane. And yet still like nothing compared to the people who have done it for 20 years.
Right. But
any day I was having a hard day, I would just look across the stage and see how engaged they were. then I would have to pull it together.
Yeah. Come on. I got it easy. Come on.
Exactly.
Right.
I've been sat here 3 years.
Right. Yes. And not even all at once. You know, you got exactly. your breaks. Exactly. No, but honestly, I have to ask because I mean, I don't think I've had anyone on from like a Chicago and Phantom type show where it's been on Broadway since the Ice Age, you know, like, so, in a show like that, like, I know, like, typically, you know, when shows open, they don't really change. But like in a show like that, it has to change, right?
It has to. I think. I mean, I'm that kind of person that believes if you hold on to a show too tight, you're going to suffocate it.
Right.
Because you're going to be bringing in new talents who have, you know, their own strengths and weaknesses that they bring to the role, that the chemistry that they find with their co-stars is going to be different. Chicago is a great show in the regard that it allowed the breadth of each individual to inform the performances. I don't think that can be any truer than the role of Billy Flynn. I saw people, you know, like Chris Sieber play Billy Flynn.
Yes.
And then I saw people like Coleman Domingo play Billy Flynn.
Yeah.
And their takes on the role were completely different. You know, there was the more traditional sort of Jim Naughton interpretations, but then like I think of Coleman, and he'll probably kill me for saying this, but like the way Coleman played Billy Flynn, and pardon me on this, but he played Billy Flynn like a gay cocaine addict.
Oh,
I mean, I would just sit back on stage and I'd be like, that is different.
Right.
But there is absolutely nothing in the script that challenged any of that performance. And in fact, it made it a really, really interesting choice in playing that role. Then I also got to see somebody like Christopher Fitzgerald play the role, who played it like the ultimate con man swindler.
And right.
Because the creative team gave them permission, it allowed each of them to play the roles to the best of their ability and bring their unique talent to the production. And I genuinely think it's why Chicago is still running to this day, because they trust the people that they hire enough, and they trust the staging of the production enough to let people do the work, and it's only going to help the show. It's not going to hurt it. I mean, I genuinely think fondly about Coleman's Billy Flynn. Even though it was night and day from anything I'd ever seen, but I was like, yeah, you, that makes perfect sense. It's like that revival of Oklahoma that came out a couple years ago, which I loved. It was like they didn't do anything that wasn't in the script. It was just not how any of us had experienced it before. But because they were able to mine those really unique moments, it left a different taste in your mouth with the exact same show without doing anything to change it or reorganize it or change words or meaning. No, it just imbued something different on it.
Now, I have to say,
it enriched it that much more.
Right. So I have to say my experience with Oklahoma was I had never seen the show before until that revival, and the way that like people were talking about, oh, like Oklahoma's having a revival, here's what it's about kind of thing. It was like almost like seemed a little boring, you know, like and not like in a bad way, but like to a 13 year old at the time, like it's not like something that I would want to go see, but I saw it. And was like, whoa, that is not what they were describing to me. So
absolutely.
It's totally like when you think of Pippin almost and what Diane did with the revival of that and making it a circus. Like when I had auditioned for Pippin, I had found bootlegs of the original production and it was not as entertaining for a 11-year-old to watch. Compared to that, like it's incredible how people can envision roles and shows in such different but yet
equally successful and equally and making sure that the right story is being told at the same time, you know. It's just incredible.
Chicago was a great show for me in that it taught me a lot of lessons. So many lessons. And that was kind of one of the biggest ones, is that you just trust the work that you're doing. There was no place to hide in Chicago. There were no costumes to hide behind or set pieces to hide behind. You were just so exposed. And so when you see people who are so confident in the work that they are doing, like somebody like Coleman or Chris Fitzgerald, and even if they are doing it completely different than you're used to, it gives you that permission structure to know that you are enough. And what you are bringing is unique and can be used to enhance as opposed to be different. It was very empowering to learn those lessons at Chicago of like, oh, it's not everything that I thought musical theater was or should be. This can be anything we want it to be. So long as we are confident enough in ourselves and the material and the work we're doing on it.
I love that. And you got to play. So each time you came into the show, were you playing different roles?
Different tracks. So that my first track in the show was Aaron. He was Aaron, who plays Hanya's attorney. Really, really not a great moment, because Hanyak is like the heart center of that show. To have to yell at her all day was pretty awful. And then as my medical replacement, I came back to Sergeant Fogarty. But my last year in the show, I played the Spirafossi in the overture, and then became the jury for the court. And that was a dream.
So that was your favorite. Because your face
it was the best part.
Your face kind of lit up, you know.
As the jury member for that whole scene, it's just like you get to do slapstick comedy. And you get you have to play six members of the jury during the course of that scene. And you have to create a physical life as well as a way to wear this one stupid coat in six different ways that makes you complete and distinct characters. And so it was just fun to get to play and have permission to be that outlandish in physical comedy every night after doing like all this slinky Fosse choreography, and then to get to completely turn it up on its head to do some slapstick every night. Loved it.
Must have been that NYU training, you know?
It was a blast. I really loved that track.
That's amazing. Well, Ryan, I mean, we've done a whole two-act show today. honestly, I mean, I don't want to take up any more of your time, but this has been
so nice everything. Just to catch up with you, let alone talk about, you know, these shows were so special to both of us and all of that. It's really, really great.
Oh, my God. Well, honestly, like, I hope people like will actually like watch this episode as opposed to listen to it on like podcasts, because just the way that you are able to tell stories and like watching you like talk about it and just the passion behind your face and the smile like from ear to ear the past 2 hours has even been like more enjoyable than listening to the stories at times. I'm obsessed. Thanks.
I think this year has been, I mean, for all of us,
yes,
raised a lot of questions, and I can't tell you how many times I've thought back to that story about Jerry Zaks telling us about the out of town tryout for Hello Dolly. Has been easy to feel like what we do over this past year is frivolous, and question the importance and value of what we do. Because it has been so removed from our lives. But I genuinely think that it's more important than ever, what we do. And those of us who get to do it and tell stories and shape minds and hearts and emotions for a living are really fortunate. And we need the reminders more than ever that what we do is not frivolous, that art is life. We get to engage in it on a daily basis.
Yeah, absolutely. So what's next? Like, do you have your eyes set on anything?
Well, I was working on a project at Encores. I was getting to do my first Encores concert, Love Life, actually, with Kate Baldwin and
oh my God, yes.
Mitchell, right as the shutdown happened. So
right.
It would be really nice if we got to pick that one up and present
yeah.
it, because that show is so unique and is never done. The show hasn't been done in New York since its original production, and there was
wow.
never a cast recording made of the show because the musicians were on strike when the show happened. So it would just kind of be nice to make that happen. And then hopefully in the next few weeks or months, there will be another announcement on something a little more long-term that will,
get me
back to Broadway and play with some friends again.
I love that, because I am very careful about who I ask that question to, because it's a sensitive topic. And
well, it is a sensitive topic, but also it's a sensitive topic anytime, but especially
right.
after the uncertainty of the last year and a half. I think
exactly.
everyone is a little more trepidatious with how much they say, but hopefully we all get to celebrate each other and amazing opportunities very soon.
I love it. I'm so excited. Yeah. Oh my gosh. This is everything. Ryan, you belong on the stage, no joke, and I cannot wait to see you, because I know I will sometime soon.
Well, hopefully we get to share a stage together again soon.
That would be a dream. And I'll be in your ensemble dressing and dressing room and everything now, because I'm an adult, so we
Crazy.
Can share a dressing room, right? Right.
Lord.
Oh my God.
Susie will still be your dresser.
Susie will still be my dresser. That's in my contract now, by the way. Susie was my dresser on Finding Neverland, for those who don't know. But yes, a gem, literally. Everyone, we are so blessed, and I am blessed. We are all blessed. Everyone listening to your stories today, this week. This is probably going to be a two-parter, actually. So it's probably going to be for 2 weeks in a row.
Sorry for the length, folks. Thanks
oh my God, it's
us.
Everything. But yes, I literally can't thank you enough. It's been wonderful to catch up with you. And I just thank you. I mean, honestly.
More soon. It's so great.
Yes.
To see you, Eli, take care. And thanks for listening, everybody.
Yes. Oh my gosh. See you, Ryan.
Take care.
Take a bow, Ryan Wersing. Oh my goodness. That wraps up the two-part episode, and we will be hearing from a new guest next week. But honestly, how amazing are these stories? The stories about Bette Midler, the stories about Cher. I mean, it's literally the episode of the icons. Like, let's be real. We're just talking a bunch of icons, just name dropping and speaking so highly, but also just talking about how much of a diva they are. Like, it's incredible, and I'm here for every moment of it, and I hope that you all enjoyed these fun stories from these last two episodes, and of course every other one. But that being said, I hope you all catched the Drama Dictionary word of the week. It's Gypsy Robe, and I was so excited that Ryan actually gave us such a great in-depth description of it, so I hope you all picked up on it. And I thought, like, why not have like a little guest do it this week if he did it so brilliantly during the interview? So I figured it would be great, and I figured it would be useful. And of course, who better to come from than someone who was able to have that opportunity themselves and wear the gypsy robe and be able to carry on that tradition. So it's just a huge milestone as an actor and as a creator. And it's very, very impressive, and something that he will never forget and hopefully will be able to do soon. Because just because you got it once doesn't mean you can't get it again. So Ryan Wersing, you're the best. I am so, so happy that we were able to catch up and talk Neverland last episode, and also all of your amazing things since Neverland in this episode. I mean, your stories, literally his stories for days. I mean, the audition stories from last episode, and even like this episode, he had so many just iconic and hilarious stories that like leaves you just with a smile on your face and just remembering how beautiful Broadway is just
even on stage and not just from an audience point of view, and just how there's literally a show within a show in every show. Just like the backstage stories and show the stuff that goes on there. Like, it's literally a whole nother show going on while the show's going on. So it's just, it's another world. And I'm so glad to be able to be bringing that to you all every week. And I hope you guys are enjoying it. And that being said, I cannot wait for next week, because we have another great, great episode, and it's with a very, very fun guest. One of my personal favorite actors and people that I've seen on Broadway, and it was our first time meeting, so I'm very excited for you all to listen to it, and he talks about some great things. So until then, I hope to see you all next week, and I hope everyone has a great week. So thanks, everyone. For this episode's Curtain Call, I would like to recognize a few people who also deserve to take a bow. This podcast would not be possible without the help from Dori Berenstain, Brittany Bigelow, Katie Rosen, Alan Seals, and the team at the Broadway Podcast Network. Next in line to take a bow is Kessie Tokash, who edits the audio and all the visuals for this podcast. A special thanks to patrons Brian Thompson, Pat McNamara, the listeners at PCC, as well as all of the other patrons for their continued support. If you're interested in becoming a patron, go to patreon.com/TAB. And if you enjoyed this week's episode, don't forget to subscribe on the platform that you're currently listening to this on. Also, feel free to give us a follow on Instagram at Take a Bow Podcast. Take a Bow's logo is designed by Giselle Bustos, and the music is by Nikki Torsha and Cormac Collinon. Bye, everyone. Hope to see you next week.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah, not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.